The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
Cool. Welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show, EDU edition. We're on today's show. We're going to talk about recent changes to the withdrawal options on the government's Thrift Savings Plan, or TSP, and compare and contrast how the TSP, especially with its new options, compares to 401ks and their options and choices for things like withdrawals and other rules. So this will kind of tie the two together. TSP, which a lot of people have out there that are working for the government, and then those with 401ks, and there's a lot of things that people with 401ks have kind of taken for granted that TSPs didn't allow in the past. There's even some things with the TSP your 401k may not have. So we're going to talk about those things today. It's a relatively recent topic. These changes have come about earlier this year in 2019. So they've been proposed and known for a while. The new withdrawal options went into effect September 15th of 2019, so just a couple of weeks ago. We've known about them for a little bit, but since they're now in place or in force, we wanted to chat a little bit about them and tie them in to some people have a 401k from a job and also a TSP from a government job. Other people might wonder what the difference is, and we'll cover all that today. So Jim's with us. I think we're going to talk a little bit about a couple other things, too, at the end, but mostly TSP and 401k comparisons.
Right. So if you are a 401k person and not a TSP person, you're thinking, oh, hell, I don't need to listen to this podcast. We're going to tie in a lot of what 401ks do as well. We're going to try to talk to the TSP people and let them know some of their changes, but also talk to 401k people and let you know some important aspects of 401ks and how they tie in. So we're trying to appeal to two audiences here, not just one. So listen to this. You might learn a little bit, but if not, and you don't have a TSP, you're losing out if you don't listen to the podcast. How's that? Try to encourage people to listen. Sure. Well, I was worried. This whole topic came about by an email request from a listener. Could you do an EDU show on TSP changes? Mm-hmm. And I thought that would be good, but that's a small sector of listeners. And I thought, mm-hmm. is there a way I can appeal to more listeners? Well, if you look at a lot of the changes being made to the TSP, they're very similar. They're trying to get the TSP to behave more like a 401k. Mm-hmm. Not in the sense that TSPs are going to be offered by private employers who offer 401ks. The TSP belongs or is essentially a retirement plan for the federal government. So that's not going to change. But the federal government is trying to get the TSP to work more like a 401k, work more especially for retirees like a 401k. What a lot of listeners out there probably don't know, the TSP is, again, the federal government's version, if you will, of a 401k plan for their employees. Their employees also get a pension benefit that most of us would kill to have, especially if it was the older CSRS pension benefits and not necessarily the new FERS pension benefits from the 80s. But even FERS, which isn't as good as CSRS, but even FERS, the new retirement benefit, and I say new, it came out in the 80s, yeah. So it's been around for a very long time. But FERS, which works in conjunction with Social Security, is phenomenal. I mean, that alone is, I keep telling FERS people, no, it's not CSRS, I get that, but it's damn good. And the thing with FERS is it kind of also, I don't want to say works in conjunction with, but the government began offering the TSP when they started offering FERS, mm-hmm. and the TSP is a savings vehicle in addition to their pension. So federal government employees will have a FERS pension. They also pay into Social Security, and they also can pay into, for lack of a better term, a government 401k called the Thrift Savings Plan, TSP for mm-hmm. short. One of the biggest downsides to the TSP was it was abysmal for retirees.
Right. Very restrictive on what you could do with it.
Exactly. Essentially, the government wanted you to get the hell out.
Right.
You retire, get out. And they lost or are losing tons of money in the TSP. A whole cottage industry was created around giving advice to government employees because it was so abysmal to keep the TSP. It was very easy to convince someone to remove the TSP. And everyone would. Every government retiree would remove it. Once I tell you what they used to have to do. And this whole cottage industry, in my opinion, Chris, sprung up. Unfortunately, a lot of it revolved around putting them in annuities and selling them annuities, which often made me scratch my head because you always could have annuitized the TSP at far higher rates than these annuity companies or annuity salesmen were trying to convince government retirees to do. We came across a government retiree years ago, you and I, Chris, down in the Denver area, who had went to a person down in the Denver area who made quite a name for themselves, being a government benefits person, whose whole plan for this person was to move their TSP into four different annuities with them. No money was to be left outside of an annuity. It was all to be put inside an annuity. And they sold it under a bucketing plan almost. Here's the annuity that's going to get you through years 1 to 5. Mm-hmm. Here's the annuity 5 to 10. Here's the annuity 10 to 15, and here's the annuity you're going to use after 15. And it was all annuities. The gentleman didn't want to keep the TSP because of the way it worked and the restrictions, but he was a little hesitant on throwing everything in an annuity. After counseling with us a little bit, he did leave quite a bit of money in the TSP per my recommendations. And I kind of say now in hindsight, I'm glad he did, and I'm sure he's glad he did. He's since moved away. But with these recent rule changes, a lot of the negativity that was forcing him out of the TSP has changed. Because in the past, folks, when you retired from the federal government, you were allowed one partial distribution.
Right. In a lifetime.
In a lifetime.
Not one a year or anything, just once. You just got one shot at it.
And then if you wanted a second partial distribution, you'd have to close the whole TSP
right, take the rest
and move
of it.
It. Yeah. They required it. Now, they would let you at the time take regularly scheduled payments, mm-hmm. but you couldn't change those payments except right. once a year. So if you just wanted $10,000 to go on a cruise or to give to your grandkids or to do something with, that would have been a partial distribution. You had no more partial distributions. The next distribution had to be a lump sum full distribution. Now, you could roll it to an IRA. It wasn't all taxable to you, but it was one partial, then get the hell out. Or if you needed $10,000 in the year, you could have said, okay, send me, let's say $12,000 so I could do the math a little easier. Send me $1,000 a month.
Yeah.
But then you'd have to keep doing that. And that, well, I don't want it all the time. Now, the following year, you could make a change to that. So I wonder if you could change it to zero. That's a good question. I don't know. I wish Michael was here.
Good thing we don't need to look at that.
We don't need to look at it anymore.
Because it's not an issue anymore.
Because it's not an issue anymore.
That's not what most people, when they did that, they would change it to another amount. They
right.
wouldn't just make it zero for the year.
But so I'm just wondering
I don't
if
know,
you
it's possible.
Have,
I
if
would
you
think
could
you
played
probably
that game.
Could.
But if you wanted.
But talk about a pain in the butt to try
to
manage this thing.
Yeah, it was a pain to try to do it. Well, Surprise, surprise. Do we still have that sound effect of Goma Pyle?
Wow, that's an old one. I'd have to dig that one up. It's not readily available.
Yeah. We used to have surprise, surprise, surprise from Goma Pyle years. The surprise is the TSP found when government employees were retiring, they were taking their money.
Yeah, shocking.
And the TSP wants you to kind of leave the money in there. So 2 years ago, this is the speed and efficiency of government, they announced major changes. And in defense of the TSP, they said, hey, look, this is going to take us a while to implement. Mm-hmm. And actually, I was being a little facetious when I said the speed and efficiencies of government. They actually announced in their press release why it was going to take 2 years. Mm-hmm. When you actually look at all the hoops these bureaucrats had to go through to change the TSP, it's not like a 401k provider who can just say, hey, we want these changes and they're done, or it might take a month or two, or they just go find a new 401k provider. The TSP provider is the government, and it took a while to make these changes, from the changing of the website to the printing of new documents to mailing it to everyone to everything they had to do. So,
and get their systems updated to handle these new transactions.
Yeah. I think 2 years is still too long. But I thought, wow, here they are trying to explain to their employees why it's going to take them 2 years to before they can get all these cool new things we're going to allow. Now, a lot of 401k people who will listen to this, you're going to be smiling when you're just realizing that only now government employees can take advantage of these features that a lot of you have taken for granted in your 401k. However, a lot of these features may not be offered in your 401k because even though they can be, like the TSP, it comes down to does the plan allow it? Well, the TSP never allowed all of these. Your options were what Chris and I said, annuitize it. In other words, just turn it into a lifetime guaranteed stream of income. Or regularly scheduled payments until the account reached zero, with the ability to change those payments only once a year, or one partial withdrawal and then get the hell out with everything else. That was it. It really wasn't very flexible. Well, needless to say, a lot of government employees left. They took their money and they left. The sad thing is what Chris and I saw is a lot of government employees being put in plans and accounts that, in my opinion, really weren't well thought out.
I was watching a show on maybe National Geographic or something here recently that showed all these seals on the rocks of this island, and they were all kind of safe there. And then something startled them, and these seals all just kind of started jumping in the water. And, of course, waiting in the water
sharks
are the sharks. It's feeding time now, and they just were waiting and waiting, and now all these seals And it reminds me of this situation where the TSP, they're all safe in the TSP. They know what they've got. They've got all these protections. They've got all these pretty straightforward choices they can make in there. It's pretty safe in there as far they can't really do much to damage themselves. But now somebody yells, run, or swim, or whatever, and they all are now forced, because of these rules, hit retirement. They have to jump off the island into the water, and now there's all these folks trying to get at them, all these sharks trying to get at them. And some people honestly wanted to help them, and I'm sure a lot of them did get helped, but there was unfortunately a lot of people that got convinced to do questionable things with their proceeds from the TSP, and that's the sad part. That is the sad part. Not everybody in the financial advice industry has the best of intentions or is looking out for your best interests. And
but even, because this is a pet peeve of mine, one of the things we're going to talk about is I'm going to get back into people who are not being ethical here, but states report record number of enforcement actions against registered investment advisors. Registered investment advisors are those who actually have to put your best interests first. Just because someone has to put best interests first doesn't mean they are. Brokers get a bad rap, and justifiably so. There's a lot of bad ones out there. Chris and I, we have a registered investment advisory firm. We are investment advisor representatives of our registered investment advisory firm. So it's not like we're not RIAs. It's not like we're not fiduciaries. We are. But I hate the marketing shtick and gimmick now being used by a lot of, in my opinion, unethical RIAs. Hey, I'm a fiduciary. You can trust me. Give me that money. And that's the point. They are no more ethical than a broker. They just think they are. Or as they often say, they're you-know-what, don't smell. Right. And it doesn't work out that way. So just be careful whether someone is an insurance-focused advisor, broker-focused advisor, or RIA-focused advisor. Doesn't mean they're any more or any less ethical than each other. I honestly believe that.
Comes down to the actions and choices of that person, that individual.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it upsets a lot of RIAs when I talk that way, because I'm not buying into the RIA is better than thou. It's the person. It comes down to the person. And this is, again, the latest headline from the states. Most RIAs are state registered. States report record number of enforcement actions against registered investment advisors.
And one would hope there's less of that. Not to go on too much of a tangent, we need to get back to the TSP discussion. But RIAs are held legally to this particular standard. So you'd hope that the threat of the legal action against them, if they don't uphold that standard, is enough to convince those maybe on the fence about acting ethically or not, would convince them to stay on the right side of the fence, where a broker that's held to a different standard, a lower standard, we'll just say it outright, is going to be maybe not as convinced to stay on the side of the fence. I think that's always the argument, but it is no guarantee, and that's what Jim is saying. It doesn't absolutely mean everyone's going to behave like they're supposed to.
Exactly. So. And the one thing I will say, because I've been registered on both sides, I know what it's like. Insurance, broker, and RIA. Insurance, in my opinion, has the least oversight. Absolute, positive, least oversight is insurance. Brokers, and when I was registered as just a broker, and later as a duly registered like I am now, the broker side, honestly, is, I don't want to say regulated.
It's the most scrutinized.
Most scrutinized.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. And a lot of the problems with the brokers are breakdowns at the firms that are supposed to be scrutinizing them. But let me tell you, the hoops, the compliance, the questions, the second guessing. As an RIA, no one does that to my firm. Nobody. If I want to put someone in this plan or in that investment, or run this type of portfolio, no one questions it. But as a broker, when you do that, you have what is called, probably it begins with your office level, if you're working in a multi-office, your office person, I it's been so long since I've been in it, but they like to call the office supervisor, if you will. Then above them is usually what is called the OSJ, Office of Supervisory Jurisdiction, that will look over everything. And then above the OSJ office is often the broker-dealer itself, the company. And there's all these different levels, Chris, of people asking, why are you doing this? Defend this, explain that, show us this. But on the RIA side, and I know the industry, I'm one. When I put a client in an investment portfolio as an RIA, no one is questioning it. Nobody.
Not up front, no.
The only people who eventually question it is a regulator when they come do an investigation, as they are supposed to every RIA office. Just because an RIA office is being audited is not a red flag. The regulators are supposed to audit the RIA offices. But it often takes years and years and years before you're audited, and then you won't be audited again for years and years and years. And when you're audited, they selectively handpick a few of your clients and look at them with the assumption that they're looking at a wide enough selection of your clients that they're going to see if anything nefarious is going on. On the broker level, every single account, every single client is being looked at. Now, that's the truth about the industry. The fact of the matter is, though, we'll do it on another show, or I'm going to get too far away. Yeah. The broker standard is what you keep hearing about, is a technically a lower standard than the RIA standard, where they have to put your best interest first, legally speaking. But recognize, folks, there ain't no one checking the RIA out. Nobody. Nobody. Nobody at all. Until that RIA is finally audited by the regulators. You're either going to be audited by the state or by the feds through the SEC.
So this is, I guess, this is more of a broad heads up, whether you have a TSP or not. If you are taking it out of, there's certain protections built into those types of retirement arrangements or accounts. There's certain types of protections. Now, TSP is not an ERISA plan, so those government plans have their own rules and protections built in. ERISA plans, like 401ks, are monitored by the Department of Labor under the ERISA rules, and they have certain protections, pretty substantial protections built in for the people participating in those particular plans. When you exit those plans one way or another, whether you're distributing it for something, you're converting it to something, you're rolling it over, you're transferring it, and when you leave those, you're now entering into a world without as much parental oversight, I guess you might call it. You're leaving a bit of the safety net behind. So make sure there's good reasons to do so. And the sad part about the TSP is they were inadvertently, I don't think this was the intent. It was just the negative side effect of how they had it structured. They were kicking people out of the safe zone.
They explained that they, in an attempt to keep their costs low. That was always their claim to fame.
Right.
And they would always tell their employees, don't leave the TSP. You're paying hardly nothing to have these accounts. So it was, okay, stay here. Well, to keep the costs low, they didn't want to have to deal with millions of retirees
making individual claims.
Right, calling up and saying, can you send me $1,000? Can you log on and do this? Can you change my beneficiaries? Can you do that, this, and the other thing? To keep costs low, they didn't want to do that. So they gave you very few choices. It's no different than Vanguard. Vanguard is known for very low costs. But Vanguard offers solo 401ks, a 401k that a self-employed person can open. But Vanguard, when we helped a person, years ago, someone reached out to us and needed to open a solo 401k. So I started researching them for them, and I talked to Fidelity, I talked to Vanguard, and I talked to one other company. I don't want to name the other company because it's a company that the person ended up choosing, and I don't want to sound like I'm endorsing that company. The reason the person didn't choose Fidelity and Vanguard, there was no flexibility in the solo 401k. None. And I even asked the Vanguard person when I was on the phone with them researching it. Why? They wouldn't allow loans, for instance. Why won't you allow a self-employed person to borrow from their 401k? Cost. He said, we're known as low-cost providers. It's expensive to do that. By controlling what features we offer, we can keep our costs low.
And the TSP took that to the extreme.
Exactly. So what did the TSP do to change things up? Let's look at that. Okay. The new changes took effect a couple weeks ago. So this show's a little bit behind. But a couple weeks ago, so by the time you listen to this, they've been in there for about a month. The big thing, after you separate from service, Chris, I wish we had drum rolls for this one. Do we have a drum roll?
You got to give me a little warning before we record
these. Oh,
be cute
with a drum roll.
I know, but I don't have unlimited space on my little thing here.
Okay, so no problem. But drum roll would be a sound effect one would want to have on a regular basis.
Now you're saying that. Okay.
But anyways, if we had a drum roll, it would play now because since September 15th, after you separate from service, you can take multiple post-separation partial withdrawals.
Hallelujah.
Oh, that's a good one.
Hallelujah. 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 Hallelujah.
That's the closest match I've got to what we're doing here. So.
But that's a hallelujah moment.
I thought so, yeah.
Because that single feature, the fact that you couldn't take multiple distributions, partial distributions, from a TSP, mm-hmm. was a deal killer right off the bat.
Right.
But for all you 401k people out there, best look at your 401k. Because I have run across 401ks. And not just from small 401k providers, although it is more common mm-hmm. in smaller companies than larger. Their 401ks limit you to one to as many as four a year. Not once in a lifetime, which is what the TSP was.
Right.
But I have seen 401ks limit you to between one to four distributions a year. And I have also seen 401ks charge per distribution, even for RMDs. And I've seen those charges between $40 and $60 per distribution. You best look at your 401k's summary plan description, where all this will be listed, as you kind of evaluate when you retire, if you want to move it to an IRA or not, look at how easy is it going to be to get at your money. Now, some larger 401ks and the retirement account for the company who we'll never name, the employer who we'll never name that I serve on the retirement board of, they allow multiple distributions anytime you call. Or log in. You
any
can do
fee?
It online.
For,
no fee.
No fee.
Anytime you call, anytime you log in, you can take right. a distribution.
So this is kind of like ATM fees, if you think about it. Every time you want to access the money out of your account, there might be this fee. And I agree. I've seen them where you're just like what you're describing, like $50 or something to
yeah.
process a single withdrawal. It's like paying $50 to get money out of the ATM.
Yep.
Now, hopefully you're pulling out more than $100 for the weekend, but... But
to me, if your
still,
401k
$50 charge, is just, there's no reason to.
To me, if your 401k charges, they're telling you, get the hell out. And they don't want you,
right.
and they don't want to work with retirees for a variety of mm-hmm. reasons. And I would consider moving it to an IRA or another employer's 401k if you went to work for someone else. But for all you 401k people, you think, you take for granted, you feel your 401k is probably, because it's your money, going to allow you to get it anytime you want. Now, even though they're not as restrictive as the TSP used to be, a lot of 401ks do limit how many times a year you can take money out. And that can be a deal killer for some people. And they charge you every time you take money out, which they perfectly well can. There's no law against that. So check your 401k. The TSP is saying you can now do multiple ones and they don't charge. It's just whenever you want, call or log in, take your money out.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a hallelujah moment for TSP people. But do recognize 401k people. It may not be as flexible for you. Now, here's something that a lot of private 401ks could offer but don't necessarily allow.
Right. Yep.
But now the 401k is.
The TSP is.
That's what I said, TSP.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm listening. Sometimes you don't think I'm listening, but I'm listening.
Most and that of the is, time. And I know where we're going with this, in-service mm-hmm. distributions.
Right.
Now with TSPs, after you reach the age of 59 and a half, you are allowed the ability to take money out of your TSP up to four times in a year.
So you got like a variety that. Of, yep. got a variety of, yeah.
Access
so this is good.
Access to your own mm-hmm. money.
And people might wonder why you might want to do this. You're still working. You supposedly have a salary. Why are you taking money out of your retirement account? Well, it could be for a variety of reasons. There's a big, maybe a lot of people have put all of their savings, if you will, into these retirement accounts. And now they're to the age where they might want to do something, go on a big vacation or something, and they don't want to technically wait until they leave the job, and so they might need a distribution, or maybe a family member needs something, or you can think of a variety of reasons, but also there might be reasons why you want to take money out and put it in a different kind of investment. Maybe you're not going to spend it, distribute it to spend it on a trip or something, but you want to take it out of this TSP before you separate from service. A lot of time for tax planning reasons, you might want to do something like that. So this now opens the door to be able to do that. And a lot of people with 401ks would like to have this flexibility too, and a lot do not, even
exactly.
though they could. It's allowed by law to have this as a feature, but I don't know if I'd call it very few, but I'd say, I don't know, would you say less than half allow in-service distributions like this?
That's a tough one because I never really measured, but I would say approximately rather than less than.
Maybe.
But I'd say maybe half allow it.
Yeah. Let's just say a lot don't.
Some choose different ages.
True.
The employer that I serve on the retirement board on never allowed it. And then employees petitioned the board. And if your 401k doesn't allow it, do what the employees of this employer did. They petitioned the board years ago and started making requests, various employees. And the board kept refusing and refusing. I always supported it. And I would be one of the few yays, and everyone else dissented. Mm-hmm. But eventually, enough people on that board saw the benefits of it. They approved it, but they approved it not until age 62. Then they've recently lowered that to 50 for a variety of reasons that I don't want to get into. But it gives you an understanding of how that board improved their vision. For years, that board thought their duty was to protect you from bad decisions. And they kept saying, why would anyone want to take their money out? We offer great investment options. We're keeping our fees low. They have protections. They shouldn't be allowed to move it. This is for their retirement. It's not for them to go spend on a vacation, which is one of the things you listed. And I would sit there saying, we don't offer QLACs. Maybe they want to purchase a QLAC to protect for longevity and reduce RMDs, to which I would get them looking at, can you explain what all that means? Yeah. I was the only financial planner on the board. Maybe they want to do conversions and start lowering the amount of options because you don't offer a Roth option, I had to point out to them. You don't offer a Roth option on your retirement account. And I said, maybe we only know the employer. We don't know their family situation. Maybe they have special needs children. Maybe they have college expenses. I said, or maybe they have a spouse who's trying to reduce the amount of work, either for health reasons or other, and they need to start supplementing the lost income. I was just pointing out to them things. And they finally came around to doing it. So I'm glad the TSP is now offering TSP employees after age 59 and a half to begin to start taking money out while in service, while employed. And you can take it out as a rollover. You can take it out as a distribution. So I think that that's pretty good. I like that. This is finally, this is a hallelujah moment, I would say for certain, for TSP employees, because I hated how they would treat Roth and non-Roth at the TSP. So in the past, if you called up and you wanted a distribution, and the TSP Roth has been around for several, many years, so you could divide your contributions and say, hey, put half of my contributions into the Roth, put half of mine into the non-Roth. Now, all government matches always went into the non-Roth. Mm-hmm. Or you could say put 20% in one, 80 in the other. Put 70 and 30 of your contributions. But when you retire and you wanted to take your one free partial distribution and you called them up and said, send me money, send me $10,000 or $100,000. You couldn't specify if you wanted it from the Roth or the TSP traditional.
It would come out proportionally.
Proportionately. Mm-hmm. Now, you can. Now, you can specify. Send me 100% from my Roth or 100% from my taxable TSP or divide it up.
Hallelujah! 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 Hallelujah!
That is a hallelujah moment.
That is. That mm-hmm. is good. 401ks should allow you to do that. The operative word here being should. But I would not be surprised if some 401ks say, no, it's got to come out proportional. And if it's that the rule, it's because their TPA, third party
administrator,
the company that actually administrates the 401k and does all this, doesn't have the software to do that.
It's the most likely reason. Yeah.
It'll come down to a software issue.
Because inside the 401k, you see it as one 401k, but then there's kind of like sub little 401ks in there with the Roth and the traditional separated in there. So they don't have to set it up that way where they can identify them individually and then pull money out of them separately, which causes some issues, though. If it comes out blended or proportionally, if you happen to have a 401k like that, it destroys your ability or effectively your ability to do things like the mega backdoor because of the proportional nature mm-hmm. of the distributions that might come back, the mega backdoor Roth. So there's some restrictions there. And actually, a heads up, I don't know, you know, you never know when one person is going to be soliciting, but a couple years ago, and I don't know that we ever addressed it directly, we talked about doing these backdoor approaches with 401ks to get money into a Roth. And we talked about this proportionality issue and that there were some concerns there. And we were called out on a Vanguard forum, actually, for it. I was reading not that long ago. I've been meaning to mention it to you. And there were some arguments against it for the reason I just mentioned. If they are in there in these separate sub-accounts and you can access them directly, you can kind of get around this. It's not a concern. And we didn't, I don't think, clearly explain that that was kind of a free pass on the pro rata issues that you might run into. And so we were being accused of not knowing what we were talking about.
Oh,
honestly.
Well, you're pro rata on any money you have access to.
Right. So if it's written a certain way where you can't get to the one piece, but you can the other, you can avoid this whole pro rata thing. So I don't want to go in too deep in the weeds, but if your 401k is structured in the right way, you can effectively do this without worrying about pro rata. But if it's not, and you'll have to dig into the weeds to find out the specifics of how the rules in your 401k are operating, it might cause you some issues there. So 401ks have a variety of rules on how they handle Roth versus traditional and the distributions related to those two things when you ask for money out.
Perfect.
So.
Okay, another thing you can finally do with your TSP is after the age of 70 and a half, if you separated from service, you are no longer forced to just take a full distribution, a lump sum distribution. They're going to allow people after the age of 70 and a half to not be forced into doing that, although you still have to take RMDs, as they pointed out. But prior to that, you would have to be forced to take a full withdrawal election after you turn 70 and a half. They're getting rid of that. Again, it was not very retiree friendly.
Right.
And they're wondering why people were moving their money. Now you can keep it in there. 401ks, I've never seen a 401k do that, but I have heard some 401ks do. I personally haven't come across one. But I have heard from colleagues that they have experienced 401ks that don't want to deal with retirees and tell you after you retire or after you reach 70 and a half mm-hmm. so they don't have to deal with RMDs, mm-hmm. you have to move your money. I've heard of it.
That's a pretty aggressive attempt
I've
to
never
keep fees
it.
Low.
I've never yeah. seen it. Yeah. But I'm not saying they don't exist, but I personally haven't seen one. But again, I don't want.
But it could
to
be
think.
In there. It's they're allowed to have a rule like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, for those of you who set up installment payments is not annuitization where you're guaranteed a certain amount of money for the rest of your life. Installment payments where you're guaranteed a certain amount of money either every month, every quarter, every year, whatever you specified, until your account reaches zero.
Right.
Then the money stops. So if you had $1 million in there and you're thinking, I want to take out $1,000 a month, I don't know how many months that's going to last, but I'm going to take out $1,000 a month and I have $1 million in there, that's an installment payment. But what if you got 2, 3, 4, 5 years into it and you wanted to change it? Under the old TSP rules, you could change your installment payment once a year. No more, no less. Now you can change your installment payments anytime you want. You can start them, stop them, augment them anytime you want. Which only makes sense, Chris, because you're only taking, you're only telling them, send me my money.
Right.
And just instead of giving it to me all at once, can you please give me $1,000 a month or $5,000 a month, $60,000 a year? But if you want to call them up later because you don't need that money or you need more money and you now want $7,000 a month, you're allowed to make one change per year. Now you can start it, stop it, or change it anytime you want. 401ks, installment payments are fairly common and should allow you to make changes whenever you want. But again, they are not a requirement, and you might have, especially those of you who have smaller companies and smaller 401k plans. They have a lot less flexibility sometimes than larger plans. And you may have a situation where the 401k isn't going to let you set up installments or let you make changes. Or what if it's a 401k that charges you for every withdrawal? Do you really want a monthly installment if you're going to have to pay every time you take a withdrawal? So you might want to think twice on that if you have a 401k. And again, with a 401k, you can get a hold of the summary plan description and all of your do's and don'ts and can'ts and won'ts will kind of be listed in the summary plan description. You don't want the full 401k document. That thing will be written in legalese, and it'll be very, very long. So by law, they have to provide you what is called a summary plan description, which are generally written in far more plain English than the 401k governing document. But get the summary plan description, and a lot of what you can and can't do will be listed in that, and just kind of familiarize yourself with that. Anything you want to add to that?
No.
You sure?
You want me to?
No.
Okay.
Okay. All right. So other things that the 401k is going to allow you to do, and we kind of talked about partial withdrawals, but they spend time listing a whole section on the partial withdrawals. Do you want to go through that?
Sure. And this is on the TSP. For one thing, right. You can take up to 4 what they call age-based in-service withdrawals, which means you've met the age requirement for an in-service withdrawal, but you're still working there. They call the other partial withdrawals post-separation withdrawals once you stop. So this is while you're still working. While you didn't used to be able to do any of it, you can now take up to 4 per year. There are now no limits to the number of post-separation withdrawals, partial withdrawals you can make, other than they don't let you make more than one every 30 days. So hopefully you're not so antsy in withdrawing such little amounts that I don't know that I'd want to take the trouble in my own life to be asking for one more than every 30
days. And that's calendar
days.
So yeah, you can't you can't take out one on October 31st and then another one on November 2nd.
Right, right.
It's 30 days from the previous withdrawal. And right. I understand what they're trying to do there. They don't want someone... And someone pointed out to me, a colleague of mine pointed out to me that a lot of the reason many of these 401ks and the TSP, and he's very knowledgeable in the TSP, especially with the TSP, he said, because they literally have millions upon millions of retirees, older retirees in their 80s, 90s, who are very lonely. Actually call just for someone to talk to and will ask just regular questions or make requests. Yeah, I'd like to take another $50, please. and just talk, he said. And I never thought of it that way. That was one thing that I had never really considered. But that could be a expense that a lot of retirement plans are trying not to have to deal with. Of their reps taking care of a lot of lonely elderly people who are calling more just for the social interaction of the phone call than for any other reason. I don't know if these rules will stop it, because you could call every day and ask for another distribution just for the hear the person tell you where you
got to
wait.
Well, I think they're now that they've rolled out online management, I think they're hoping people will slowly use that more and more and more. And if they make it difficult to get through on the phone, and so it kind of directs people over to the online portal, that will control some of that. But I can only imagine, because we all know people that reach a certain age and they call to talk to you and don't really have anything
to say,
necessarily. They just need the interaction. And if you're nice enough to them when they're making their TSP withdrawals, they'll probably want to call back and talk to you.
Right. And it's a sad thing we just mentioned there. And it was something that I had never thought of. But I was talking to a colleague over the springtime about these changes, because we knew they were coming in September. And it was a gentleman. He pointed that part out to me, that he says, you got to recognize they have millions and millions and millions of retirees. And this was a concern of theirs, is the amount of lonely retirees calling. But apparently, I don't know how he found that out, but that was something that he claimed.
And then you can take partial withdrawal lump sums while you're receiving post-separation installment payments. So it's not an either-or. You can have it set up for them to send you quarterly, $10,000 quarterly or something, and then just randomly call up and say, hey, I need an extra $20,000 to do this, that, and the other thing. You don't have to tell them what it's for, but send me another $20,000. It doesn't, just because you're in the installment program, getting money regularly, doesn't stop you from making a separate individual partial withdrawal.
And most 401ks should, again, operative word should. Being should work in a similar manner. You can set up an installment payment and take additional dollars out. But please understand, both TSP people and 401k people, an installment payment is not a guaranteed lifetime stream of income. It's just an automatic distribution every month, quarter, year, whatever you set up from your retirement account, from your 401k. And IRAs offer these too. Most IRA custodians will offer installment payments. But when the money runs out, the money runs out. Do keep that in mind.
Nice.
Anything else you want to add on that?
The last one's not real important, just to cover all bases. If you're taking age-based in-service withdrawals, it doesn't prevent you from taking post-separation partial withdrawals. I think this is in a given year, so you worked 6 months and you were working there, and you took some withdrawals there, which are limited while you're in-service distribution to 4 per year. Once you then separate, those limits aren't still attached to you. You can still make post-separation withdrawals under the post-separation rules, I think is what they're getting at there. So that's probably the least important of the four bullet points in that area.
Okay. I think we covered. I'm looking at...
I think so.
Everything
here. There is more online. They used to, since they didn't really allow you to do much, it used to be fill out a form and mail it in when you wanted to do something, and that's been modernized so that they've got an online portal, and that's really how they can efficiently deliver these extra services or choices, is they don't have to hire hundreds of thousands of people to handle the phone calls and the paperwork. It's more set up more in a modern fashion, I guess, online requests. So those of you comfortable with that will have the flexibility of making these withdrawal requests and look up balances and things like that all through an online portal, which they didn't used to provide in the way it is now. It was very basic kind of a situation before. And I think the last thing is, if you were set up under the old rules, and say you were set up to make, you'd set up installment payments before these rules went into place, because it was one of your few options, you can then start to take advantage of the new rules. Just because you elected something before this rule went in. They're not locking you into that. You now have available to you all of the choices that people are granted with this change now effective September 15th of 2019. So I'm sure there'll be a few people that were kind of in between transition that had already retired a few years ago playing by the old rules and now would like to do the new rules. And the good news is you can. That's perfect.
A couple of things that I also want to mention where 401k people may not have these. TSPs do allow hardship withdrawals, and a lot of 401ks do not. The retirement board that I serve on, their plan does not allow hardship, and they're not bending on that one. And they do not allow hardship withdrawals. So hardship withdrawals are totally different. We don't want to get into them. I don't even think there's something that our listeners, most of our listeners here, are not in a hardship situation where you have no other money available to you. All money has been drained. All readily accessible dollars have been spent. And now you still need to get at some money and you have no choice but to take it from your 401k. That's pretty much a hardship withdrawal. You are really destitute and at the very end. It's supposed to work that way. And it doesn't exempt you from the 10% penalty. It just gives you access to money that was locked away in the 401k that you couldn't get at because you may not have a 401k that allowed in-service distributions, or you may not have been at the triggering age to receive the in-service distribution, which most of them are somewhere between 59 and a half and 65. So hardship withdrawals are allowed from the TSP. They're not often allowed from other retirement accounts. So bear that in mind. The one other thing, the TSP does support, Chris, beneficiaries and allows beneneficiaries, the spouses of decedents to open their own TSP account and keep the decedent's money at the TSP, even if they were not themselves a federal worker.
And have all the withdrawal options that the participant had, yeah.
And most 401ks, even large 401ks, don't allow that. I'm not saying all, but a lot do not want that. If you're an employee, you can keep it. If you're a beneficiary, get out. And you have to keep that in mind. Now, the beneficiaries are not going to be forced out. They can move their money to an IRA. They usually send ample letters giving them ample time to effect the move to an IRA. But a lot of 401ks do not want to deal with beneficiaries. But the TSP, and I don't know, I will admit, I don't know if they extend that beneficiary benefit, if you will, to non-spouse beneficiaries or not. But I know TSP spousal beneficiaries could keep the money at the TSP. And the TSP has very limited investment choices, essentially five indexed options, as well as what they call L shares, which are lifestyle, very similar to life cycle funds that 401ks have. Those are the funds with the years at the end. You'll see a 2020, 2030, 2050, 2070. So they have those types of offerings and five index offerings. But they have a unique account known as the G Fund, which now with this flexibility, I could see the G Fund in these low interest rate environments being a good place to park a lot of what we call bucket one asset, money that you're going to spend over the next year or two, because the G Fund yields on par with a money market, but actually probably a little bit higher than most money markets. But it is extremely, extremely safe.
Right. And the reason why we couldn't really recommend that as a bucket one choice in the past, so for the needs in the very near term that you want to have liquid, readily available, and protected so it's not volatile with the markets or interest rates, you couldn't use the TSP as a resource for that because of these archaic, restrictive withdrawal rules that they used to have.
Well, it could be a bucket one as long as you took money out once.
No, I get it. I get it. But,
it'd be one hell of a good bucket one for one shot.
One shot, yeah. But now with all this extra flexibility, that's a viable choice. Even if you rolled out the rest to go put somewhere else, leaving behind money just to be in the G fund is a viable choice for people that really wasn't that didn't really work well before.
Right. And we have nothing against the G fund. It's a great, safe place to leave some assets. We wouldn't recommend it all in there, but I will admit, I still don't like the very limited passive only 5 investment options inside the TSP, coupled with the L shares, which just take those 5 and break them out for you so you don't have to, into an allocation that's appropriate for any given period of time. And then they move like a life cycle fund. That is a very limited choice. So you still, if you're a government employee or even if you're a 401k person, you might have a really good option inside the 401k. Or you might really like the ERISA creditor protection that you can get in a 401k, especially if you live in a state that will not give IRAs creditor protection. Colorado does, but California doesn't. So there could be a number of reasons, Chris, why you may want to leave all money in one of these accounts or just some. And you might want to say, hey, I don't have all the investment choices I want, so I'm going to put some money outside of these accounts, and I'll leave some inside. It's not an all or nothing move, but if someone was to ask me today, what's the biggest thing you don't like about the TSP, prior to September 15th, I could go on and on
list
and
a
on.
Whole book of
and
them,
there's
yeah.
a whole book out there why I don't like it. But now I do like it. So if you are a government employee and you're working with an advisor and that advisor is forcing you to move your TSP to an account with them or strongly recommending it, you best be sure whatever that recommendation is now truly makes sense because you have great flexibility. And if they're telling you to get out of the TSP and just buy a whole series of annuities, and we are not anti-annuity, but we are anti-only annuity. And if you're being recommended to buy an income annuity from someone and you're in the TSP, I'd be very careful because the TSP offers an annuitization benefit. Probably will pay more income than any annuity that agent is offering you. And I would look at that first if you truly want that or need that. Because you probably have Social Security and probably have the TSP. Excuse me. First, yeah. Thank you. You may not need more guaranteed income. So they're going to hawk the annuity to you maybe for principal protection. You got one of the best principal protection options out there now known as the G Fund. So be very careful if you're being pushed products as a reason to move your TSP. But the same to you 401k people. If you're being forced out of the 401k, make sure it's more. Like, just make sure your 401k isn't going to have flexible withdrawal options, or your 401k is going to be charging you for every withdrawal. If it's just because allegedly you're going to get better investments, I'd be careful on that. I really would. Because again, Chris and I question all the time what is known as advisor alpha, especially for retirees. You're going to be consuming assets now, no longer growing them. You need to position assets to protect, to spend from. You need a wise spending plan, and perhaps the stable value option inside your 401k, assuming your 401k offers the new flexibilities that the TSP offers. Stable value option would be kind of the 401k equivalent of the G fund, mm-hmm. even though it doesn't have the explicit and explicit guarantees that the G fund has. It's similar to it. The stable value option might be something to consider for some of your money. Don't be too quick to move it all, is all I'm saying. I don't know if you agree or not, Chris. I don't want to speak for you. But don't be too quick to move it all. And especially to advisors who insist on managing all your money for a percentage of assets. Be very careful on that.
Yeah, I'd say when you're moving anything, there should be a clear and understandable reason for it. Don't move just to move.
Right. Don't move. I need to work with this guy and he'll only work with me if I give him all my money.
There should be, and if that's you've decided it's worth that to do that, then maybe you consider doing it. Just make, I think people do it willy-nilly. In my mind, there are very simple justifications for moving things, and some as simple as just consolidation. I don't want to deal with these eight different accounts I have spread out all over the place. I'd like to bring them into one place to make it easier. That could be very well an
absolutely
robust justification for moving something.
Simplification.
But make sure, if you're ever wondering, gee, I wonder why I'm moving this, and you don't have the answer to that, you better figure it out, because you don't want to move and make a bad decision. You want to move for a reason that is going to benefit you. Simplicity is a reason. So if that's
and
the
as
reason,
you age, especially when RMDs begin, that's an excellent point, Chris.
Yeah.
Because multiple employer plans have to have multiple required minimum distributions. Whereas an IRA, you can have multiple IRAs, but you only have to take one distribution from one IRA equal to what all the distributions from all your IRAs would have been. But for simplicity's sake and simplification, especially as you get into your 70s and 80s and 90s, and multiple accounts can be confusing, moving them makes sense. And maybe moving them while you have the ability to understand what you're doing and you can make wise choices and choose a good custodian and a good advisory firm to help you if you're looking for help, I could very well see that as a reason. But just be careful if someone, whether you're a TSP or 401k, and someone is just saying, well, in order to work with me, you got to move all your money over, or I don't work with you, then I'd find someone else.
Right.
But that's just my own personal opinion. But you are right. Simplification, definitely. Mm-hmm. And without a doubt, I run into people all the time. As they get older, they don't want multiple accounts. It gets confusing. It's confusing even when you're younger, but it gets really confusing. And they want
it just increases the
just
chance of making a silly mistake, forgetting
wrong
to do something, reduces the amount of statements and mail you have to deal with. I mean, there's all kinds of justification for doing that. So.
Exactly. All righty. Well, that was all we wanted to cover today on changes to the TSP and how they relate to 401ks.
Yeah, and we want to remind everybody that we are practicing retirement planning, folks. We're financial planners who specialize in retirement planning, I guess I should say. That's our niche, if you will. And if you're interested in learning more about our process and what we do in the retirement planning space, we encourage you to reach out to us at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. You're not required to bring your assets over to us to talk to us. We do this novel thing where we provide different services to people and we charge them for those services. You don't have to have us manage your assets to have access to those services. So if you're interested in that, we'd like to talk a little bit more about your particular situation. You can schedule what we call a coffee and a second opinion, which is our free introductory meeting where we can chat a little bit more about what we do and what you're looking to have done. And if things align, we can hopefully work together. If not, maybe we can direct you to a resource that's more aligned with what your needs might be. So we can deal with people pretty much throughout the whole country through this fabulous new thing called the internet and telephones. And we meet people face-to-face as well, but just because you're not in Colorado, where we're located, doesn't mean you cannot work with us. So if you're interested in what we're doing here, just reach out to us. We'd be happy to chat with you. But we'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.